Okay. Audio is working.
What?
My. An interesting answer.
Very interesting answer. I have no comeback other than that. You're online.
You have not yet been identified.
Were you out kiteboarding Sunday?
I wasn't. Sunday I was spending my time fixing kiteboards, or kites, fixing kites.
So the woman has, like, it looks like he's on a
I see a lot of pictures of you on Facebook.
Yeah.
Is he riding above the water? Uh-huh. It's a hydrofoil.
Okay, so that's actually
it's actually a board. I'm sorry, I don't know the correct language for it, but it's a fin, a long fin, and at the bottom it has a like a hydrofoil.
You're a lurker. Remember when you called
it's,
that?
Yeah, well, it's...
We're lurkers.
It's,
we get on and look.
It's like a keel, but under the water.
See,
it's like a board, but under the water.
Under the water.
What's that?
It's a board. It acts like a kite.
Well, it acts like a sailboat keel, but it's under the water.
I mean, it's like this one.
You have the board here, and then you have a plank that goes down, and then at the bottom of the plank is a level that's a small board, and it allows you to get more tension, for lack of better words. I'm sorry, I don't have the vocabulary for it. So it's ideal for lower winds, and I mean, it's just a whole different experience. You're flying above the water. You're hardly getting wet. I have not embraced it at all myself. I think there's enough things out there that are dangerous to do.
That sounds like, I mean, for some reason, I didn't think that was a piece of wood.
A piece of something.
Rigid.
I want to know is when it takes you out of the water and lifts, you start going higher and higher. When do you let go and fall into the water?
You fly the kite. That's you ask any of the kiters. It's you just keep flying the kite, and because the kite's going to come down at some point.
It might be, you know, in a palm grove or something.
Well, yeah, and back
a long swim.
Back at the beginning of it, there were some crazy stories like that. There's a great video from back in the early 2000s of a guy in Hawaii coming off the beach. And actually, it's on video only because they were interviewing people on the beach. And so you're in the middle of this interview. You watch a guy race past behind. And then you hear people in the background of the interview going, "Hey, look at that. Look at that." And they pan over, and this guy that just ran up on the beach, he's going up into the sky. And he's trying to work his kite back down onto the beach. And he ended up going, I don't know, 10 meters into the air.
Wow.
And then does this number get coming back down and ends up landing in the parking lot on the other side of where this interview is going.
Wow.
And it was a scary video for a lot of us that it's like, wow, look at that. Nobody ever thought you could lose control like that before. Now the equipment is so much safer. It's hard to imagine getting that much power into a kite and not being able to get it out. The old kites, you were pretty powered up most of the time.
I think I outgrew that activity.
Intense activity. Your extreme sports days are over, Chester?
Yeah, absolutely. Even my exercise days are over.
Okay, I still have... What do I have to hit over here? I got a button to press right here.
About time to go home, isn't it?
What'd you learn today, Chester? Not to come early.
Well, it's not even started yet.
Have you any unanswered questions?
That's up, that's up. All right, I think we're rolling a few minutes early. I could send out a message.
A few minutes early, yeah.
A few minutes early. It's just... almost a quarter after.
Yeah, we haven't even started yet.
This is our seventh meeting.
God. I really missed out.
Thank you for the reminder.
Oh, yes, please. Silence your telephones. I guess I should do mine, too.
You remember that?
I'm going my fifth year on this one.
I've got some of those $4 back in.
Yeah.
You. Take target practice.
No, I never dropped it in water yet.
I use about four of those.
That's what's going on.
But I also.
There we go. Okay. That's good. That's good. What am I missing? The tweet.
Sometimes you can't find the remote. Oh. And it's got one, two, and three.
Dashboard.
And I can plug something on the lower patio.
There is an amazing amount of stuff that I'm juggling on this one computer to make all this happen and work the way I'm hoping it'll happen. I'm asking a lot of it.
I don't every day do the same things. Some days I don't want the lights on the lower patio.
When's the last time you saw a pager?
So number two is in the living room, and I hit number two, but then if I lose the remote,
hey, Mike's here. All right.
Clapper.
Yeah.
Let Mikey do it.
Where's his chair?
He was right ready to rest.
Oh, he gets his chair. Yeah, you got to pay first. Glad to be back.
She usually
here. Oh, gosh, I hope not. I look like I'm connected.
That's funny you say that because
everything seems to be working.
It says I'm connected when I try to do a search. It says I'm 78 cents. If you go to buy them during the year,
okay, good. Because I was going to say everything about what I'm doing looks like it's working. I think we're going to get started. If
bulbs all the time, I don't know if it's the girls what they're doing.
I wouldn't mind having less light behind me.
Here's the green screen.
There we go. Burgundy screen.
It's the same as your shirt.
I should be lost into it, right?
All we see is a head.
The talking head.
Same color as the background.
Okay, well, it is 9:15, so we'll go ahead and get started. Once again, I'm Scott Stimson, and you guys are the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Tuesday from 9:15 to 10:15-ish to talk tech topics and solve the world's problems.
There's 20 of us.
There's 20 of us today? That's great.
Wow.
I need to get a different camera so I can pan across to all of you and make note of it online.
Get a drone.
A drone, you know, what a great thing to start with. Did you see the Disney drone that does graffiti? Mm-hmm. I was watching a video this morning. I know nothing about it. I was looking for topics for the computer club, and I found a video from CNET that was talking about Disney Research Center. I didn't even know they had a research center, where they're working with a drone that's tethered that will use a computer to spray paint. And so they can send it a certain distance of the tether and have it spray paint murals that are in the computer. And it actually, it'll map out its placement, kind of like GPS does for your car. It would map out placement in the artwork so that it can take breaks and be changed and modified.
Change color.
And brought back up and start off where it left off. I mean, it's doing, I guess, the equivalent of a kind of recognition to recognize where it is in its art to figure out what point to continue with. I thought that the art would look very shaky because you think about a drone, it's kind of doing this kind of number. Well, if you watch it paint, it's got an arm that what's the word for it?
Stabilized.
Yeah, it's got a stabilizer in it, and it's constantly moving this paint jet head that's compensating for its bouncing in the air. It's very impressive.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
We're doomed.
I have no idea what it would be used for. I think Disney came up with it. I can only imagine their goal is to be able to do things like paint things on a set really up high and do things of that nature.
You target like billboards.
Yeah, billboards.
You're wearing billboards just targeted as a person trying to buy a certain car. You know what kind of billboard it is.
Maybe as a juvenile delinquent you could, right? Or maybe you're describing a whole new kind of billboard where you could have the drone as part of it. So throughout the day, it's painting messages on the billboard. The billboard.
Is this the drone that is about 3 foot diameter?
It actually is a modified. It's a modified drone. I can't remember the drone manufacturer. It's a really well known drone manufacturer. I want to say DJI, I think, is the name of it.
It was outside of the hotel restaurant.
Marina Terra?
No. The old hotel.
Well, this would be a different...
Howard Johnson.
Just sitting up in the sky, just sitting there taking pictures.
There it is. Yeah. Probably Google.
Mm-hmm. It's on the beach.
Did you guys see where these news, like CNN, MSN, MSNBC,
who watches
Fox,
that?
They, well, yeah. The point I'm making, Reuters, they are creating these drone fleets of reporters, and they are hiring drone operators. So they are teaching and certifying drone reporters. And they'll have a fleet of drone reporters that can go out to an area and use drones as part of their coverage. Yeah, Jim.
Also down here in Mexico, I believe they just passed a law. It's illegal to operate a drone that's over a half a pound.
Without a license.
Unless you have a license.
And a hell of a fine if they catch you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
So all these high-fangled, heavy, big drones. All the operators have to have licenses now or they get fined or
and
whatever.
I think I also read where an American can't get that license.
I did read
only
that.
Mexicans.
Maybe not. I don't know.
I read only in Mexico.
Only Mexicans.
That's interesting.
In Walmart, you can buy a drone that is about 8 inches across. It takes pictures.
That's probably legal.
Yeah, everything. But it's under a half pound.
$900.
But it's under a half pound.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That'd be legal.
Yeah.
Wow.
In the United States, real estate industry has been semi-revolutionized by the drones. Because in the past, if you ever wanted an aerial shot, you hired a plane for a lot of money.
Yeah.
And a photographer. And now people just, salespeople just learn how to do it themselves in the air.
Wow.
Say that again, Mike.
I'm going to drone
in the past, if you wanted an aerial shot of a piece of real estate, you would have to hire a plane and a pilot and a photographer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of money, basically. And now people are teaching themselves how just to do the same thing with a drone. So you spend $2,000 on a drone, take their own pictures, and, a real nice...
It's interesting how it's shaping all these different industries that weren't even.
Your money every time you turn around.
Yeah. It's so they'll be dropping packages off, right, pretty soon.
Yeah.
And the thieves will have their drones pick them up.
Well, the pirates.
Yeah, and they have. Well, gunship drones.
Dogfight in the air
with a guy on it.
And if we live long enough, we'll come to the club meeting in our helicopter.
Yeah.
Right. Well, did you see where Dubai? I think it was Dubai. It's Saudi Arabia. Is that Dubai?
Business, yeah.
Yeah.
Manufacturing.
I know.
Well, what they've done is they've put police officers on flying bikes. They are teaching their police officers how to patrol on drone-inspired flying bikes, right? Well, these bikes, it's kind of like a jet ski, but it's got the quadcopter on it. So it's got the quad blades on the four corners of the bike, and they're going to use it for law enforcement. Yeah. They're not going to feed their poor, but they're going to have flying police officers.
The biggest change coming is in war, the military.
Oh, I bet you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, that saves a lot of lives.
Well, both offensive and defensive.
Well, you think about all the droning that went on throughout the Obama administration, and now that stuff's still going on. It's just not news anymore, because news is something unusual, and that is standard practice now.
The operators are in Georgia or someplace like that.
Yeah.
Nevada. All the places we lived in LA.
Well, closer to home, all the motorcycle cops in Wyoming are hiding behind signs. And so you have to watch out, because they all have cell phones.
My partner's house is burned down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even the guys that are walking have cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
Get this guy.
Sure.
He ran a red light.
Yeah, you know, my brother-in-law taught me that lesson really early on when I first met him. He's like, don't drive like that. I'm like, why not? It's like, he'll remember. I'm like, so what? He's like, no, he'll remember. He taught me very quickly. The first time I was stopped where I had to be stopped, he remembered. So now, of course, they got cell phones. It's just like, okay, here comes the guy for you. Well, all this has been sporadic and inspiring. I did bring topics, which I find interesting. But does anybody have any questions or topics they want to contribute right off the bat? Anybody? Going once? Going, oh, come on.
Yes.
I'm not that organized.
Anybody that's using 2007 Office.
Oh.
The problem that we had.
Office 2007. The Outlook 2007. Yeah, so I was helping Chester with an issue the other day. Nothing changed about his configuration, or I have to assume nothing changed, because I wasn't the one that set it up the last time.
Yeah, nothing changed.
But it just stopped sending and receiving email with his Google account. And what it is that Google has updated their security. And most of your programs that interface with a Gmail account have also updated their security. But Chester is using Office 2007. He's using the Outlook portion of 2007 because he enjoys the interface. Yeah, he's gotten accustomed to it and doesn't want to change, which is fine with me, but it does require the fix to his problem was to go into the Gmail account and lower the aggressiveness of the security to allow your Gmail account to connect to less secure emails clients. And Chester and I talked about it back and forth, because at first you're not really aware of what that means. While you're making a decision like that, you really have to keep in mind that you're always doing this balancing act between security and convenience. You have to judge how important complete security is versus the level of convenience that you want to have. In Chester's case, he would have to learn a whole new interface for email. Only he knows how important that is. I can't make that decision for him. As far as this balance of security and convenience, if I had to make my decision specifically on security, I wouldn't allow him to use this software. I would encourage him to upgrade the software. At the same time, it's email we're talking about. Email is the least secure form of communication on the internet. There is something to be said about doing all that you can, but when all you can do is 10% of the risk, you really have a lot of convenience to play with there. Because you're creating more aggravation to yourself than there is really risk that you're increasing. The increased risk is nominal because you're at such a high risk with email in the first place. Even the most secure email clients can't stop your email from being broadcast and duplicated and stored in thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of servers on the internet. You have no control over that. That is just the way email works fundamentally. This security that we're talking about is that connection between your email program and your email server, and it's very specifically your connection, which means that you are at risk when somebody decides to target you directly or target your connection directly. And that level of risk is minimal for people like ourselves. There, unless you know you have enemies out there that are trying to take advantage of you, that level of security really isn't that high of a concern. I would practice better security because I want to be the model of my industry, what I'm doing. We should always be trying to be as secure as possible. But I do feel that it's a fair discussion whether it's whether the convenience factor outweighs the security or the security outweighs the convenience factor. I don't think you're opening yourself up to any more risk by choosing to use the less secure client. But I did feel like Chester had to make that decision. I couldn't make that decision for him. My job would be to say, well, it's not as secure as if you use the newest version. If everybody's following what I'm talking about. Yes?
I'm wondering if that's my problem. The local government in Colorado sent me a form, an email, and I clicked on the link. I said, click on the link and open the form up, and you'll be able to fill it out. But I clicked on the link, I could open up the form, but I cannot fill it out. Is it because I need to reduce my security?
It's doubtful that's the case, but maybe there's a... do you have to fill it out online?
They suggested I do that because I'm down here and I can't get the form back any other way.
Because I imagine what you've brought up is a PDF form.
I don't think it's PDF.
Were you trying to vote?
Colorado said that it's because I'm using Outlook. If I use Google, then I could fill the form in.
So that would be a different issue. I'm imagining it's a PDF document that if you had Google's PDF reader, they're able to receive what you type into it. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're using your own PDF reader, it's not obvious whether you have that ability or not. So that's probably what they're getting at when they say if you're using Outlook. Because if you're using Outlook, then you have to use a third program. Mm-hmm. And you've got them, then you've got your email program, and then you've got this other program that reads the document that was sent to you. The form.
So the third program would be something I get from Adobe?
Well, it would be, but what they're saying is that if you were to use your email through a web browser, mm-hmm. then that would be that reader would be embedded in the in the web browser. It's part of the web browser now. But Firefox, Chrome, and Internet Edge all have natively the ability to work with PDF documents. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that that's probably what they're talking about, is if you were to bring it up in Gmail, you'd have to be using like Chrome or Firefox. And
well,
that would
none of those worked for me when I was trying to fill in a Colorado form online.
No, maybe none of that worked.
Colorado.
Because maybe. I don't use... I work on a Mac, so I don't use...
pardon me.
Whatever that was.
Okay, I've filled in federal forms, IRS forms,
so I had
the
to
same way.
Fill it out.
I'm not Colorado, so I think it's Colorado.
It.
I can't
demonstrate.
Do you have a printer? Yeah, print it out.
Printer, yeah.
One of do you have a scanner?
Yeah, I could print and scan. You're right.
Yeah, just yeah. print it out and fill it out.
I mean, it was a real pain. I had to print out my ballot, attachment. And it was 11 pages.
This is a real frustration because you're working from a world of paper documents trying to automate the processes. And so probably what you're getting handed is a PDF form, which was never intended to be an interactive document.
Yeah.
It was intended to be paper in electronic form. And so we've bastardized it through the years with these different... I'm thinking about my voting experience. I voted by fax.
Me too.
And so I had to get the voter, the ballot from the state of Alaska. They wanted me to fill it out online. They didn't even bother with the PDF. They had a form for me to go through in a web style. And then they auto-generated the PDF from my answers online so that I could then print it out and fax it in.
Mm-hmm.
Voter
fraud, mm-hmm. I think, has got to the height because we received the form.
You had to set this off, right?
Yeah. Email for voting.
We won't last on this long.
I could not send it back. Exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. We just took it. We drove it down there, but.
I think fraud's the wrong word, because I got busy signal, busy signal, busy signal, busy. It's not fraud. It's suppression.
Yeah,
there's a difference.
Voter suppression.
It's voter suppression.
Like I can't vote in Arizona. They won't let me.
That's what
because I don't have a street address.
It is suppression, because I was up all night trying to fax in my vote, and finally it went through. And I tweeted about it. I tweeted the Alaska electoral... I got answers. Said it's the only way. This is how we do it. There's no other way to get your vote in by fax. This is the phone line. And that's the ridiculousness. They could have
get more lines.
There's nothing actual about the fax process anymore. It is all virtual fax servers that are spun up by the phone company when you need a fax line. And so there isn't like a back room full of fax machines that are receiving paper ballots. There's a service they've hired from the local phone company that's collecting a database full of faxes that will be sent to a printer when they're ready, and they'll start being printed out, and then they'll have somebody manually go through the printouts. So all they have to do, the state, all they have to do is spin up more fax lines. But they didn't. They let us all have busy signals.
And when you tell them that their system is antiquated, they don't want to hear it. That the federal government, you can only fax some forms to them.
Interestingly, on the IRS forms that you fill out online, you fill them out online, and you can print them, but you can't save them.
Oh,
right.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That.
Right. You can't save one, but you can print it.
You can save the form, but it doesn't have the answer.
It doesn't have any of the numbers in it.
How do they know?
Well, they just can't. I don't know how they know. But I've tried. I can't save
well,
it.
Well, unless you pay Adobe for the software to do that.
Yeah, Adobe does have distiller software is what it used to be called. I don't know what it's called now.
If I want to save the tax form.
That they can tell that you are not in the U.S., they can see by the IP address that you're not in the U.S.
Sure, yeah.
I haven't had that problem with IRS.
Except mine was in the U.S.
Remember we had the problem with Humana?
Uh-huh.
Well, they fixed that now, but...
I did download
they
Epic.
They wouldn't let us...
Yeah? Did it work for you?
They wouldn't let us fax into Humana
not
for a long
this.
Time.
It doesn't work on that.
Because they knew you were
there's an Epic for
Mexican IP address.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Well,
I had a friend dealing with the same problem on her Macintosh, and she's like, "What VPN should I buy?" I'm like, "Well, why don't you just try this browser?" And it worked immediately. So if you guys weren't here last week, we were talking about embedded VPNs in browsers, and somebody brought up the Epic browser. And we've got two cases where they were able to resolve their issue using a service in the States. Because it was recognizing it was coming from Mexico, they were able to use the built-in VPN to act as though they were in the United States and get access to the service. Now, this wouldn't be like Netflix. Netflix has too much money and too much reason to recognize that you're not doing it the way they want you to do it. But these other things, what was it you were trying to do? It was
my Colorado Springs utility bill.
Yeah, trying to pay the bill to Colorado. And Colorado is one of those states that has decided they're not going to worry about the GDPR. This is what I speculate. They don't want to worry about hanging on to people's information in a way that satisfies the European law. And so what they've done is they've blocked outside the United States access to their services, which makes sense because who needs to pay utility bills in Colorado from outside the United States? But Judy does. But
well, if you've got a freezer in Colorado, you darn well.
Right. But what's easy for them to do as a utility is just block outside U.S. access, and then they're not at any liability issue within the European Union. And that's what a lot of these services are starting to do. Sophisticated services recognize they have to be international, and so that's the reason you've ended up with going to websites that have verifications. You know they have cookies. They're ready to tell you their policy, their privacy policy. It's the reason that you can go to your Google account, you can download everything you've ever given them. You can go to Facebook and look at all the advertisers that have your information. It's all because of this European law. These large companies realize it's too expensive to try and maintain two different sets of rules, and so they've adopted the European rules, so we all get to take advantage of that fact. With things that are public entities, they may decide not to make all those changes. It's easier to flip a switch that says nobody outside the United States gets access to it, and now they've satisfied European law. Nobody should be trying to get into their service from outside the United States. It's not their liability issue.
So what are the rules?
The GDPR? They're actually really reasonable rules from my perspective. I think that good stewards of information on the internet should be following these rules. It includes things like being able to provide you as a customer of the website, access to the information collected about you at the moment you request it. And what this translates to is an automatic process where you can go press a button and look at all the information that's been collected on you from that website.
How do you do that?
Well, it varies on the websites. Both Facebook and Google have different ways to do it, but it is very easy to do. I think in Facebook it's under your account. If you go into accounts, you'll find a button there that will let you download all that information. It's a similar thing, but I haven't gone looking for it. But it's there. It should be as easy as a button press.
So what are the rules?
Well, I can't give you every rule. I can give you some examples of what this means. What this means is what I just described to you. You can get information on what's collected at a moment's notice. That you have the ability to request that information be deleted. That I don't remember the time period. I'm thinking it's 3 years, but it might be smaller than that. That your information is definitely deleted within that time period, whatever that time period is. There's a very specific time period. I think it's 3 years, but I don't remember specifically. On the GDPR?
That's one rule, right?
Yeah, that's a lot of different things right there. And it all has to do with data protection and privacy. And we're not recognizing this kind of stuff in the United States at a federal level. But California is passing state rules that follow this same spirit. So that we're going to start seeing state by state. And it is so difficult for an organization to do specific state rules that it will just force all these services to be compliant with the spirit of these rules.
Well, that's what happened to Colorado with all those Californians moving to Colorado.
Yeah. Mike, I see your hand up there. Do you have something to add?
My guess is some of this group would have watched CBS the other night, 60 Minutes, after the Rams game.
Yeah.
And there was a real interesting, even-handed piece, I thought, on how Europe is treating privacy and how long it can last before you can reclaim your privacy back.
There are pieces of it that I really like. The only thing that makes me a little concerned about the way it works in Europe is you have the right to be forgotten.
Yeah.
And they've had that longer than they've had this GDPR, but it's included underneath the GDPR is this right to be forgotten, and I think that that's a real questionable thing. Like, if the information is accurate, if it's absolutely true, why would you need to be forgotten? Or why would we make it okay to be forgotten?
Because somebody can buy that information and use it to make money.
Well, we're talking about it being public. This is the issue, is that it's public, and they don't want it to be public anymore. These are people that were accused of a crime, and they've done their time, and now they're back in society, and they don't want, when you put their name into Google, that their time shows up, their crime shows up as one of the first items that you find in a Google search. Exactly. I feel the same way. I think that, I mean, if it's, and if, to me, it doesn't matter what it is. If it's accurate, it's true, it's accurate, there's no question that that was you. I don't understand why there's a question about whether you have a right to be forgotten about it.
My guess is that I remember reading examples of stuff that was not accurate and still hanging out there.
Well,
I think that was the driving force.
I do believe that's true, and there are systems in place to get that brought down. And you're right, that I think that was a driving force in it, was to be able to. But this applies to everything. This right to be forgotten means that if you were in a scandal and you're no longer in the scandal anymore and you don't want anybody to know about the scandal, oh, after a certain period of time, you can ask them to forget this information. And this is an extension, because the original right to be forgotten, you had to approach Google or services of the such and say, hey, it's been so many years, I want this taken down. By European law, you have to take it down. The GDPR says, Google, every, if it is 3 years, I'm using 3 years as the reference, I don't know if that's true, if it's been 3 years, it should no longer be showing up, and you're liable for it not showing up, or for it showing up if it's not showing up.
Well,
did I say that right?
In opposition to what you're saying about morality of the world is involved in this very subject,
mm-hmm.
and the whole idea of forgiveness, if it goes on forever, if the information is always there, there is no forgiveness.
Yeah, you're right. One of the reasons that we're dealing with this as an issue is because we are still stuck in this mindset in the past where we have personal privacy, we feel secure in it, we get upset when it's taken away from us. But I mean, you talk to people like my kids, you talk to millennials or younger.
They don't care.
They have no concept of personal privacy.
Oh.
And I'm a firm believer in, if you can do it, it will be done. I think it applies to technology. I think that if it's possible to collect information on people, they're going to do it in all forms. And I do believe that you have to have rules that punish people for breaking technology. But I still believe it's going to happen. I think the only protection from technology is other technology. And until you have that other technology, then you have to have rules in place to hold people liable for it.
I would not want everybody in the world to know.
It's an arms race.
When I was 7 years old up until 16 or 18, I would not want that. I don't think anybody would want that.
Right. But I think that, in my personal opinion, that comes from a mentality of being able to maintain your privacy. It does not come from a place of realization that there is no more privacy. If we go forward with this technology, there is no more privacy. That is not the world we live in anymore. And by being forgotten, you're not forgotten by the people that are... You're not forgotten by the government. I'm sorry. It doesn't happen. And it happened overnight. It literally happened overnight. Because of the way technology grows exponentially, things that you only could imagine in a sci-fi movie last year is standard practice this year. All this information is accumulated. All this information is indexed. Your name can be fed into a government database, just like Snowden made very clear, and all your activities will pop out. The only thing stopping that from being used regularly is laws in place.
The phrase that's come up in this meeting for years now has been security and convenience,
mm-hmm.
or privacy and convenience, and everybody's choosing convenience.
Well, this is what just happened. I just read her. A friend of mine from Seattle just wrote her incident that she happened. She just went to Europe with her son. She got body searched 5 times. The last one was in Iceland, and they were going to do a cavity search on her to come back to the U.S. She's absolutely livid about it.
Wow.
And she wrote her whole detailing episode.
But there must be something
a name
back there.
She must be, she is a writer.
Okay.
So
she's a journalist. Yeah.
She's a writer, and I'm just wondering if it has something to do with that.
With something that she's writing?
Yeah, because she knows that they talked to the U.S.
This is my problem with all this right now. We are in a limbo right now where there is no privacy.
Right.
You don't have any control over who gets the information.
Right.
And this is the leap that I think that is going to be a generational leap. I don't think any of us can wrap our head around it. I'm 48. I don't think I can wrap my head around it. I think my kids are going to be the ones that really understand that it's not about trying to protect your privacy. It's about having open access to all the information.
Right.
Because when you have open access to all the information of what the governments are doing, what's happening to the, like your friend there, when all of a sudden it's being broadcast, hey, look at how these people are being treated, mm-hmm. people will congregate together and go, well, that's not the way we treat people. And whether it's government or whether it's journalists or whether it's businesses, when the information's completely open, we will act as a community about things that we see as wrong.
Uh-huh.
Right now, the problem is only these isolated silos of information are collecting, and uh-huh. only the people that maintain those silos have access to it.
This is depressing. Isn't there another subject?
I got other topics. I don't know how we got on this one. Let's go on to another topic.
Let's talk about the election.
No, oh yeah, something light, just a little palate cleaner. Hey, I brought a couple of topics that I thought you guys might find interesting. Volkswagen has just integrated Siri into its services. Alexa's already there. I didn't realize this till I was reading the article, but apparently Amazon's already in Volkswagens. But now Siri is as well, and so you can use your iPhone to start your car, turn it on, turn it off. You can turn on the air conditioner, the climate control. You can start the charging. If it's an electric vehicle, you can start the charging, turn off the charging, all from phone controls. There is some other cool stuff in here, too. Like, it will remember where you parked, so your phone will tell you where your car is.
That's important.
You could ask it to check how many miles are left on your charge. If you're driving down the highway, you could just say, hey Siri, how many more miles can I go before I have to recharge? Or you can ask your phone while it's parked out in the driveway. So I thought that was kind of a cool thing. But
put it on your computer for free now.
What's that? Siri?
Alexa.
Alexa, yeah.
I put it on my Windows 10 the other night, and I was playing around with it. I mean, the stuff you have to pay for, of course it doesn't have. But it does a lot of stuff. It let you, which I don't have, but certain ceiling fans have this item that you can put up in the fan, and then you could control it off your...
Off your phone, yeah. Or your Alexa.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Off your Alexa, but... You could control it right there, and all that wasn't a charge.
Recently, we were traveling in car in Nevada, mm-hmm. and we asked Alexa how far it was to the next town.
And it just told you?
Yeah.
Really?
The thing I was going to say about Volkswagen, and the reason I found this very interesting, because I thought you'd all find this a bit interesting, this is obviously going to include things like Startup Pandora, and Play Music and stuff. So the experience would be driving down the road and just talking to your car. It would But what I thought was an important part in this was Volkswagen. For this to happen, you have to be running Volkswagen's CarNet app. To use CarNet, it's a monthly service subscription fee.
Of course.
All right. So this is not happening for free. And I think this is, you're going to find this with everything. In fact, this might even be a decision maker for a millennial that's going to buy a car, mm-hmm. is whether he or she can use these services for free or if they're looking at monthly fees. Or if they're even buying a car. I don't think they care about buying cars.
No. Well, you
scooters.
Alexa on OnStar.
They're like, Alexa, my Siri works for calling Uber. What do I need a car for?
So my Ford has there's an app on my phone, on my iPhone, that links my new car with my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a message that said, your car is going into deep sleep to conserve battery.
No, your car said that?
Well, my phone said it from my car, and it was like...
I don't like you.
This
it's
is too
creepy.
Scary.
Yes.
So I had to go out and start my car.
because I don't drive it much down here, so it's like
that's
too
funny.
Scary.
But it was referring to the car. It was saying the car is going into deep sleep mode.
Because it's a special app that's the Ford app that's...
Oh, of course, like a laptop. It's going from sleep mode to hibernation mode.
But now it's my
your
car.
Your car is doing it.
Yes.
There's probably a number of things that are available at your fingertip, but it requires computer processing time in the car.
I can do all kinds of things with the car from my phone, but it's...
Right.
That was
you
a little
check
scary.
Levels and see mileage and give you health information and
I
software updates.
It. Because of that.
Well, I would bet the car is still doing the sleep mode regardless of whether you have the app or not.
Yeah, Ford's and Lincoln's.
The app is a passive thing.
Yes. So it's not just the app, it's the car.
The app isn't doing it. The car's doing it. The app's just letting you know what's going on.
It's just saving the battery for you next time.
Yeah.
And Lincoln does that too.
That's wild.
It was...
Like a laptop.
Disconcerting.
You can put it in a bag for 30 days and start it up.
Got to hand it back over here.
Yeah, Ed.
My wife has a question. She has...
Where is she?
She's too busy for us.
Let her know my feelings are hurt.
She has Facebook on her PC.
Yes.
And she has Facebook on her Android phone, but they show up with different some stuff comes on the PC, it doesn't come on the phone, comes on the phone, doesn't come on the PC.
First of all, I think we're all dealing with that. It even gets even weirder if you're using the Windows 10 Facebook app. Is that what she's using? Or is she just going to the web page? Because a web page is the catch-all for every feature that Facebook has available. It will always have the most features, is that a safe thing for me to say? So far, that's been the case. I don't know if that'll change in the future. But what I've observed, I think what a lot of us have observed, is every Facebook experience is different. You do it on an iPhone, it's different than an iPad, which is different from an Android phone, from an Android tablet, which is different from the Windows application from the store versus the web page from a web browser. It's all different.
Well, you know, if you use Facebook on your, like, Windows 10 computer, and you're not using the app, it's different than using the app.
That's what I'm getting
at.
The
app on your phone is a Lite app, I believe. It's Facebook Lite or something.
Well, I think Lite is available. You can download a Lite version, but it's not the only version available. The point I'm making is... Your app, your Facebook app, it's an experience.
Yeah.
And the experience is different based on the platform you're on. And there is not some kind of sync between them. It's more does the settings allow you to set it up the way you want to have it in that experience? And some of those experiences are very limited. I know that the Windows 10 Facebook app, it's gotten more and more robust over the last year, and still there are things missing from it that force me to go onto the web page or go to the app on the phone. I administer a number of Facebook pages. I imagine your wife will probably do something like that at some point, have a Facebook page for Spanish lessons or something of that nature. Well, what Facebook did is they pulled all the controls out of the phone app for those activities and stuck them all in a separate app called Facebook Page Manager. So 6 months ago, I was going to my phone app to add an administrator to a page. Now that feature doesn't even pop up on the phone app. I have to go to a completely different app if I want to do it from the phone, whereas both those features are just right there in front of me if I go to the web page.
So if she went on her phone and went to the web via, you know, Google or whatever,
it would be slightly different as well, because
it'd be more in sync with her PC-10.
It has the potential of it, but it's important to realize that these providers are building to experiences, and that in itself is another experience. The web browser on a mobile phone. It's even tailored down to Opera on a mobile phone, Firefox on a mobile phone, Chrome on a mobile phone. So she could go to two different web browsers on the same platform and have a different Facebook experience.
It's just the way it is.
It's just the way it is. That's right. Yeah, there will be... Yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, there will be... Web browser to web browser, there's going to be a lot of the same things that you can set and have the same kind of experience because you're having an underlying web browser experience of Facebook. But they have the ability to tailor that even farther to now you're having a Firefox web browser experience with Facebook. Yeah.
Are we moving away from Windows and toward Android?
Well, probably a fairer statement is we're moving away from caring about the platform we use and moving more towards the services we use. So I'm not talking about you, Bob. I'm talking about when I say you're, I'm saying in general, the people in general are more interested in going to Facebook than they are concerned about how they got there. If you follow what I mean, okay, we're less concerned about that whole interface in front of us, and more concerned about where we go with that interface. So whether it's Windows will be, it's hard to say. I don't think Microsoft is confident it's going to be Windows. They've done such a wonderful job of embracing Android and embracing iPhone. It's a different company than it was when I grew up with it. They have released software for Macintosh before they've released it for Windows. They have a beautiful Android environment, and there's a good chance that they might start pushing out Microsoft phones running Android. There's a lot of speculation on it right now. They've got a launcher that's Microsoft. They have the ability to put in the default apps as being like Office apps, using OneDrive as their cloud service. They've got a really nice offering that they can license to phone manufacturers, and phone manufacturers can say this HTC, for example, is the Microsoft version, the best Microsoft version of Android you could have. And what's gone down in Europe right now is that they have they fined against Google. They have basically churned up legislation very similar to when they went after Microsoft with including Internet Explorer as a monopolistic tactic with their operating system, and they forced Microsoft to pull Internet Explorer out of Windows computers. For you guys, the end result would be you'd turn on a brand new computer you bought at the store, and one of the first things that it would be asking you is, which web browser do you want to use? Do you want to use Internet Explorer? Do you want to use Opera? Because the European Union thought it was important to create a level competitive playing field, because Windows was so dominant in the PC world that Internet should not be pushed to Microsoft. They considered that a monopolistic tactic, and they wouldn't go down in Europe. And so all these computers had to come with this selector of, do you want to use Netscape? Do you want to use Opera? Do you want to use all these different web browsers that existed at the time? So this is a very similar thing that they've done with Google. They've said to Google now, they said, you cannot include your tools. You cannot force your tools to be included with Android. So Android has this huge dominant position in these devices. And the European Union has said, Google cannot include Gmail cannot force Gmail to be included, cannot force Google Drive to be included, Google Docs to be included, cannot force them to be included with Android. You have to license Android to phone manufacturers without those tools for free. And so, and that's the mandate in Europe now with Google. So they have to allow Android to be installed without, and that this has come up because that is the new Android. The new Android since version 9 is you have to take these Google applications if you want the Google Play Store. The Google Play Store is where you get all your other apps. As far as normal people are concerned, as far as you guys are concerned, the Google Play Store is where you go get your apps for your device. If you and what they're saying is that if you're going to build a phone with straight Android and you're not going to put Gmail, you're not going to put Drive, you're not going to put Docs in it, well, then you're also not going to have the Google Play Store. So they're forcing these phone manufacturers to include the Google Apps with it. The Google Apps are what they use to keep track of all your activities so that they can better advertise to you. Yeah, Mike.
As a parallel, let's suppose that AT&T had never been broken up. We might not have cell phones today.
You wouldn't even be able to buy your own phone to put in your house
exactly,
today.
Yeah.
Well,
so it was that breakup that allowed all this energy to come to the fore.
To conclude this, what has happened is Google said, "All right, fine. If you're going to force us to release a version of Android without these services in them." Then if a phone manufacturer wants to include our applications, they have to pay $40. So what it has inadvertently done is it has raised the price of phones in Europe. Because no phone manufacturer would include an Android phone without the Play Store. Nobody would buy it. And so now they're all paying $40 more. Because Google is spiting them.
Where's the pirate that works around that? There must be a pirate somewhere.
Well, this is Microsoft's opportunity because they can offer their platform of services for free because they haven't been mandated to pull their stuff out. And so phone manufacturers in Europe can offer a version that's a strictly Microsoft Android experience.
Firefox can do the same thing and Apple can do the same thing.
Well, those are browser companies, and so there's nuances in what you just said. But essentially, a phone manufacturer, you could have a Samsung offering in a cell phone store where here's the Google offering, here's the Microsoft offering. The Microsoft offering is cheaper because it can be cheaper because the European Union's not forcing any restrictions on them. This manufacturer can put all Microsoft stuff on it without paying a higher cost for it. Whereas the Google stuff, because they've got regulation against them, they have to pay more for the installation of those things. So the phone inherently ends up more expensive. Yeah, Ed.
Got one more problem my wife has that I can talk about in public.
I'm going to put a section here, Ed's wife's problem. Go ahead.
She's got an Android phone, and she has WhatsApp on it. And so they ask her to upgrade it. Well, she goes to upgrade it and tells her she has to delete WhatsApp or another app to get free up space. Yeah. Now, I've gone through her whole phone and either disabled or deleted everything that possibly I can find, and it still has massive amount of storage used up.
Let me write this down for a topic for next week, because I'm dealing with this, ironically, on my wife's phone.
Is this not my wife's computer.
The issue she's having is WhatsApp. I have sent her a video of the dance they did at Shots on Friday, and she can't bring it into her phone because she's out of storage space. The storage space for WhatsApp is internal storage. It's not the expanded card like you're dealing with. And there is a real hassle moving WhatsApp's storage space over to the card. I learned that there are, and I should know this, but for some reason I don't, that there are applications in the Play Store that will allow you to take control of where these things reside, put them in a very straightforward list, and allow you to administer which ones move over to the SD card. So I'm hoping by next week I will have a recommendation for the one I like and which one's been most effective. And there are very specific WhatsApp instructions for WhatsApp using a specific one of these that say you don't have to root the phone. You can get it right from the Play Store. I think the restrictions on your level of use with this and how flexible it is going to end up being what version of Android you're running. But I'll have more information about that next week. Yeah. And
you
I'll
can
make
bring
a note
her.
Here. Moving apps to SD card.
Does this work for iPhones too, Scott?
No. This is specifically an Android thing, and it's because Android phones allow you to add extra memory to them in the form of a micro SD card. And then every version of Android deals with that scenario differently, and every phone manufacturer running Android deals with that scenario differently.
I have the same problem with my phone. I just went through and deleted chats.
On an iPhone, you have no option. On an iPhone, if you're out of space, you're out of space. You got to clear up the space.
And it worked.
Yeah. Yeah, on an iPhone, you can go into the settings under the storage management, and you can see, I mean, that's really nice. You can look at each one of the apps, and you can see how much space it's taking up. And that includes more than just the app itself. It includes everything that's associated with the app. For example, you could see your music app is really high, and it would indicate that that's all being used by music, or your podcast app, and it's all being used by the podcasts. The podcast, if you're a podcast listener like I am, that's a great place to go looking for space because those things are very ephemeral. They're still out there on the internet if you want them, but maybe if you need space immediately, you want to just get them out of your system. So you can just delete all your podcasts, and now you've got more space.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I wanted to bring up at least one more topic that I thought you guys would benefit from. Bob, specifically you. All right, maybe not specifically. But we have talked about in the past the DNS service of 1.1.1.1. You guys remember this?
Yes.
This is the DNS service being provided by Cloudflare. Cloudflare being a content distribution network. Cloudflare is a very interesting, it has a service very similar to Amazon's web services and Netflix services, a content delivery a network, a CDN, is one where they have gone and they've put physical hardware out in your local area, and they mirror the things that you're interested in your local area to boost your performance on the internet getting access to it. The easiest way to wrap your head around this is Netflix has servers that they have contracted to have placed in Telmex and Megacable's data centers so that when you go to watch a movie, that movie is physically closer to you. So you're not having to get the movie from California. You're getting it from Mexico City, or you're actually getting it from Guaymas, depending on how deep they've got their servers. That is a content distribution network. They recognize where you're geographically located, and they send you the content where it is closest to you. Now, Cloudflare has been doing that on the back end for a long time. Amazon does this too. There's a joke on the internet that every business is run by Amazon. But that's not true because Amazon has about 30 to 60% of the market, and other services like Cloudflare take on the rest. So Cloudflare has servers in your local market. Now they've decided to help people with secure DNS for free because they're there and they want you to be aware of them and they want businesses to use them. They can actually give you DNS services faster because they're so close to you and they have decided to make your lookups unrecorded. So when you go to look up CNN.com or Fox.com, there is no ledger keeping track of you doing it on their services, so there's no ability for some agency to come and request that information. There's no advertising being done based on that information, and that is really what's happening right now. Telmex, Megacable, and the like have access to all that information because that's where you typically get those services. And they are building up advertising lists that they can sell to advertising companies, and that's how they're supplementing their income. So 1.1.1.1 is a DNS server that can be used, and we've talked about it in the past. What I discovered this morning, and I think it's only happened in the last week, is that Cloudflare has put out an app for both iPhones and Android phones. And I tried it out this morning. And the idea is that it's really hard to set your own DNS. We talked about it before. This is not a novice. I mean, most of us would want to use 1.1.1.1. Most normal people don't know how to get it set up in their house.
Is it O-N-E?
No, it's the number 1.1.1.1. In fact, if you go to 1.1.1.1, you'll end up at their services from Cloudflare that will talk all about it. So it's great extended reading if you want to hear more about secure DNS lookups. They will walk you through it. It's still very painful to set it up yourself, but especially for not for me, it's very straightforward. I deal with stuff like that all the time. But if this is your first time hearing this, I mean, it's overwhelming. You don't really know what I'm talking about. Go to 1.1.1.1 and you can get educated in this whole topic. But what's important is if you don't know anything about this and you're just interested in more personal security and possibly faster lookups, then they have an app now that you can download into your iPhone or into your Android device, and it quite literally is just a button. You open it up, you flip the button, now you're using them. And what's very neat about this versus what they were doing before is that you set up a VPN with them specifically for DNS lookups. So now, before it used to be they're not keeping a ledger of all your lookups. That's still in place. But the thing is, DNS was open. When you go and ask for an address, that asking can still be tapped into by anybody that's looking for it. That all happens in the open, in plain text. Now that you have a VPN to the DNS, none of that can be listened in on. If it is, it just looks like gibberish. And so they've added a new layer of free security for you. So they're not keeping track of a ledger of everything you're doing, but nobody can covertly be looking at what you're doing, because it just looks like gibberish. And they're offering all that for free just to have I don't see why. I mean, they're either going to start their own VPN company, but I don't think they need to. I think they make plenty of money doing what they do. I think they're really doing it as getting their name out there in the space, making sure that when developers are hearing AWS from Amazon, they're also hearing, hey, you can use Cloudflare as well. These are powerful tools providing us with a lot of security at the touch of a button for novice to use. So I highly recommend everyone should have this. It should only benefit you. And what I like is that if for some reason you think it's not working right, you can go to the app and turn it off, and you're no less off than you were before. There's no painful configuration to put back in place, which was the case before.
Where the DNS is going to.
Yeah, that was...
The DNS is their own proprietary system of DNS.
US?
I speculate that it is a peer-to-peer sharing DNS, which is not a model that's used on the Internet traditionally. It is their own way of doing DNS. But I haven't done any research into how it's put together. So I think your DNS request is literally going to a server that's the closest server to you, but then that information is updated by an encrypted channel to another server, and so on and so on. The difference is none of that stuff was done encrypted before. It was all controlled by your ISP. So that information was broadcast in the open. It was collected by your ISP. It was all being used for advertising information.
Can we put it in your Netgear?
Yeah. Yeah, you can configure it as your DNS. But that VPN, I haven't seen instructions yet for a way to do that from a router. And undoubtedly, you'd need to have some router software that supported VPNs like DDWRT or OpenVPN or OpenWRT, something of that nature, to be able to do something like that. So you're giving up that layer of security. But I love the idea that you can have a phone, you can have it in any network, and you can have this active. Actually, on my phone, it's just active right now. I've just had it on. I'll leave it on until something looks screwy. So far, I haven't seen anything looking screwy. But as soon as something looks screwy, then I'll turn it off and see if it goes back to normal. And I'll know whenever I'm doing that, I can't use it with this DNS. Go ahead.
Does this stop, like the other day when we were talking about earthing?
Oh, no.
I'm not going to talk about it.
This is not related to earthing. I know that.
I Googled earthing, and then I opened my Facebook page, and I already had an earthing ad on my Facebook page.
That is absolutely what this would stop.
That's pretty typical.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely what this would stop. So I think everyone should look into this app. I think it makes sense for everyone. You can go into the Play Store or the App Store on the iDevice, and you can either search for Cloudflare or you can search for 1.1.1.1. Yeah, Linda's looking at it right now.
It's pretty Cloudflare. Far down the line when you go to Google Play.
Yeah, in Google Play, it's not the first thing that pops up.
Is that Cloudflare?
Yes, it isn't.
Look for Cloudflare when you do 1.1
or Flare.
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 F-L-A-R-E.
You can search 1.1.1.1, but when you go through the list of apps that are found, make sure it says from Cloudflare.
See what it looks like? It's a little square with a 1 and a 4, and it's colored.
There it is.
There it is.
Yeah, here it is running right now.
So it's pretty far down the list, but keep going.
Like,
it isn't at the top of
the
list.
Take the place of Epic Browser somehow?
No. Okay. Now it wouldn't, because the only thing the VPN is used for is the lookups.
Oh, okay.
Now,
is to what?
Is the lookup.
So if I was trying to open something, it's not going to do it.
It's not going to do it through the VPN.
So you would just open this on your own.
No. From what I understand about it, you install it, you turn it on, you forget about it. You would leave it running the entire time. You do all your stuff with it. That would give you the most security and the potential of going faster than you are right now. And we could get into the discussion of faster, because it all has to do with the content distribution network. But basically, they are rating faster lookups than your local ISP or any of the big ones that are out there for DNS.
So it seems like if you looked it up, though, it would then be, you'd be blocked then from somebody seeing where you were looking it up.
That's right. You are blocked, all the information, where you are, where you're going, what you're doing, all that's blocked by that encrypted channel.
But once you click on that to open it, it's not blocked anymore.
You mean like your search result? Like you search something?
Yes.
So here's what we're talking about is this. You search a word. You bring up Google. Mm-hmm. The act of bringing up Google, you had to ask for google.com. Mm-hmm. You use 1.1.1.1 to look up the number associated with Google. Mm-hmm. That lookup, what you asked for, where you asked it from, where the results are coming from, it's all blocked in that channel.
Okay.
So it cannot be, no one can eavesdrop on what that is. You get your result. You click on the result. That result is going to a server out there that's not the DNS.
Okay.
So it's outside the VPN.
Okay.
So then you're at the mercy of whatever encryption you have between you and that site. Now, Google uses encryption, but not all sites use encryption still. And actually, it would be interesting if anybody's using a VPN regularly, to how this works in conjunction with the VPN they're using regularly. If you're using like ExpressVPN, if this gets in the way of your trying to bring lookups through it, I would think that if you had the VPN in place, then this would be another VPN. It would be down the channel of the VPN that you're using. And so it has the potential of having lag that you wouldn't have if you weren't using it.
Did you download it?
Yeah, I've got it running on my Android device right now.
I've got it putting it on my phone now. We'll see how it...
So far, I've noticed no difference in performance. Hmm. It's like I don't even know that I'm using it, which is the way you want something like this. All you want is for things to work better or no change.
Get something like...
How do you spell cloud what?
Cloudflare, F L A I.
No, F L A R E.
A R E. Oh, okay, yeah.
One word.
Thank you. You're making me realize why I couldn't Google search it earlier. I don't know how to spell. Hey, and I'm going to mention one last thing that's just for fun. While I was doing research this morning for things I thought would be interesting for us to talk about, I found a video from CNET. Mm-hmm. That was pitting the Siri voice assistant against the Google voice assistant against the Samsung Bixby voice assistant. There's some good tech humor in it, watching as they deal with each other, the three phones. But what I really got from it was stuff that I didn't know that you could ask your phone for. And so it's funny to watch, but it's actually pretty informative too, because it'll give you, all of us nowadays, if your phone is 5 years old or newer, you can do these voice things with your phone, and a lot of us aren't aware of just how many things are out there. They were doing stuff like they were telling their phone turn on the flashlight. Well, I know a lot of us are privacy concerned and security concerned.
How do you find this?
Go to sccclub.org and sccclub.org. It's the website we use for the computer club.
Oh, okay.
And I'll post it there so you can find it easy enough.
Yeah.
But again, going back to the voice thing, some of us may, I mean, I do. I have the voice turned off by default on my phone. But things like turning on a flashlight with your voice, that might get you to turn on the voice. I mean, it might. I mean, you think about it. You're stumbling around with your keys in the dark, and it's like, you know what? If I could just say turn on the flashlight, and I don't need to find the little button on the phone, that might be enough for you to want to turn on the voice assistant.
You know where that'd be really handy?
I love toys.
Where that would really be handy is when you want to video something or make a quick picture.
Right,
you don't have to go in there find what photo, you know.
Well, that was the other thing is if you've got the talk function on, you can say take a selfie. I didn't know you could do that. Take a selfie. You mean like I could hold my phone out and say, "Okay, Google, take a selfie," and it would bring up the camera or orient the camera to the right camera because you have a front and a back camera. You can't take a selfie with a back camera. Right, but so Google's got to know to turn on the front camera and then take a photo.
Can you put the microphone on your desktop or you go through Google?
Well, what you have to do is you have to turn on the Google Assistant.
I know, I have that.
Yeah, do you have it on? Like, can you say "Okay, Google" to your phone?
You have to hold the button.
No, well, right now you do, but what we're talking about is not holding the button. We're talking about it just...
You can just go Google?
You say, "Okay, Google."
Okay, Google? No.
No, and that's how a lot of us have our phones, and it all
that's
comes
why
from...
My assistant came up on my tablet.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you don't use that on your tablet?
No, it came
a lot
up on my tablet.
Spawning from a concern for personal privacy and security, a lot of us don't have these voice assistants active by default. But... You know, you look at some of these features that are available, and that convenience factor starts edging up to, well, maybe I'm not as concerned about my security as I thought I was, because I'd like to be able to tell my device. You know, if you could say, turn on the flashlight, my phone can be half the size. I mean, if you...
The trouble is, when you're driving around in your car or your truck, things happen. You'll be talking to your wife or whoever,
and because I've got it on my Garmin.
Where is right. that flashlight?
And my Garmin all of a sudden starts asking me questions. Well, why did you say this?
Yep.
You're going to go in. Shut up!
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That definitely happens. My echo goes off at random times. At times we'll hear it's like answer a question that was never asked.
Yeah.
We're like, shut up, Amazon. What are you doing? You should be smarter than this by now.
Well, do you think that this Google Assistant is better than Android?
Google Assistant versus Bixby, which comes with Samsung, versus Siri is what we were really talking about. And Cortana's got to be in that list at some point. At some point, Cortana's going to be playing in that same field. I think the point I was trying to make, and I think you should see the video to see my point, or to see some of these. When you're asking for tools, to me, I always look at my phone as a Swiss Army knife. To me, it's the virtual equivalent of a Swiss Army knife. You're able to introduce new blades into it to extend the metaphor. Right, you can add and remove blades to it, but you're still having to.
Turn on voice.
You got to turn it on. Yeah. You got to put your.
Find it.
You got to find it. I mean, it sounds like a great idea, but if it's going to take me 5 minutes to get there, what's the point? If you can start doing things like call my wife, turn on the flashlight, take a selfie, the phone doesn't need to be so big. It could be a little stick again in my hand, as long as it's really accurate. It's stuff like that. That may be all I need from the phone. Turn on the flashlight. It doesn't need to be bigger than one of those old candy bar size phones. Send an email to my wife telling her I love you. If it can do all that, why do I need a bigger phone?
I'm anxious for you to post this.
Yeah, I'll post the video. I'll try and get to it this afternoon. Well, you know, we maintain a website for I maintain a website for our club at sccclub.org. And San Carlos Computer Club, and it's sccclub.org. And whenever I find things like this I find interesting, I post it on that page. You'll also find recordings of all of this was recorded. I see some faces here I don't recognize. If you didn't know this, you're live on the internet. you have given permission by showing up.
Who's that?
That site will lead you to everything. It'll lead you to the feeds, the audio feeds. It'll take you to YouTube. Oh, neat. Oh, that's great to hear. And what's your name?
Betty Lou.
Betty Lou. I think we chatted through email or something at one point. Well, thanks for showing up. Everyone's welcome. Please bring your questions and your topics. And what's that?
And your neighbors.
And your neighbors. Bring your neighbors. We're going to shut it down because we're at the ish time. It's 10:30. People like myself might need to go to the bathroom.
I think that's too much.
That's an overshare. I probably shouldn't have said anything.
Oh, that's okay.
But thanks for coming. Again, I'm Scott Stimson, and this has been the San Carlos Computer Club. And we meet every Tuesday at Tequila's. If you're in San Carlos, you want to join us, come early. Come at 8:30 or so, and you can get breakfast. Tequila's is a great place to get some food. They give us great table service, and they give us great Wi-Fi. They got a great Wi-Fi connection here. They've got a fiber optic link, and we get to take advantage of almost the full bandwidth while we're here. That goes up to about 30 megabits a second. If you're in town looking for great internet, this is the place to find it. No, Richard couldn't make it today. Richard, you have become so popular. I can't believe how many people have asked about you today. You really missed out today.
Yeah, you're needed. Somebody needs photography.
Somebody needs your photography skills. I'll be seeing him later. I can mention it to him, Maggie. If you don't mind, I'll give him your cell phone number.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Just WhatsApp.
Or I'll get you his, too. Yeah, I'll sit down and do that as soon as I'm done here. I guess that's it. Until next Tuesday. Oh, I forgot to promote myself. I'm from International Computer Solutions. I would appreciate, wherever you are on the internet, if you're having computer issues, that you get a hold of my business. We are in the business of providing IT solutions. Whether you're a Macula or you're somebody that's trying to digitalize a photo album, I would like to be the person that helps you. So get a hold of me through internationalcs.net, scott@internationalcs.net, or call our offices locally at 226-0209. This is always a great experience. I love being here. I'll see you guys next week, next Tuesday. Until then, tech on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maggie.
I'm
impressed.
Oh, thanks, Dan.
You got an advertisement in it.
Yeah.